Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, when most people think of Toyota, they think of cars, trucks, and other kinds of vehicles. But this week, we'll learn that Toyota is involved in much more.
We'll speak with Doug Moore, the head developer of the Blade project within Toyota's partner robot group, about a device under development that uses computer vision to help the visually impaired navigate large indoor spaces. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Doug Moore.
Yeah, I think the tip of the week that I would share is take the time to get to know people, because it's easy for us to make assumptions and it's easy for us to think of something from our perspective. But once you get to know people, it's amazing the viewpoint that you can have from them. And then when you connect with them, it's always easy to see how other people connect in the same way. So tip of the week, take the time to get to know people.
And it sounds like that has been quite a learning experience as this Blade project progressed. You've learned a lot about your users, how people use these devices, et cetera.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's true of the blind community. And I think it's true of all communities. The more we get to know individuals, the more we realize how to connect with those people. There was something that I heard at one of the conferences that I attended that was great. And it was really the comment that we want to live the life we want to live. And I think as research and thinking about products and how we actually connect with this community, that's what what we want to try to enable. Can people live the life they want to live? And that involves mobility and involves freedom and involves communication and connection with others. So to the extent that we can actually enable those and really focus on the people first, that's what we're trying to do here at Toyota.
And I think what he says is a universal truth, and that all of us, whether visually impaired or not, can be grateful to companies like Toyota for trying to achieve the ability for everybody to live the life they want to live.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Guide Dog Foundation, training and placing guide dogs for over 70 years, providing independence, enhanced mobility, and companionship to people who are visually impaired or have other special needs at no personal cost. To learn more about their programs or to apply for a guide dog, visit www.guidedog.org. Let's start by meeting Doug Moore.
My name is Douglas Moore, and I am the manager of the Partner Robot Group here at Toyota in North America. My background is primarily in robotics and artificial intelligence, brain-based artificial intelligence. I did my undergraduate degree in mechanical engineering, and while as an undergrad, I started working at a place called the Neurosciences Institute, where we were doing biologically based artificial intelligence, where we were modeling the brain and trying to understand what the brain was doing. And then we would put that model on a robot in the real world to see how it would perform. And so from that, you know, there's a lot of excitement and experience that I gained in both the brain-based artificial intelligence and robotics platforms and the challenges that we deal with in the real world, which capture a lot of the typical things that we try to investigate within the robotics communities, whether it's computer vision or navigation or understanding what's in the environment. So from there, I did a few other jobs related to robotics or mechanical engineering, et cetera, and eventually found my way here to Toyota, where they're focusing on things like mobility for all and quality of life improvements.
And how long have you been at Toyota?
So I've been here with the Partner Robot Group about 4.5 years. And since the beginning, I've been working on this project for the blind and visually impaired, in addition to some other projects that we're doing for research and development. And now I'm currently managing a group where we're focused on trying to bring this product to market. And we're also continuing to do research and development related to robotics and robotics technology.
And we'll be talking about this project some more in the focus part of this show.
Many of our listeners have visual or other print impairments. Do you?
No.
So what got you into working on a product for the blind?
So this really stems from the motivation of Toyota, again, as a company that's interested in improving quality of life for individuals. and focusing first on communities like the blind and the visually impaired, or other communities that have similar sort of challenges where we can actually use robotics as a positive impact on people.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the Blade Project within Toyota's Partner Robot Group. They're doing research to develop a device that will use computer vision to help the visually impaired navigate in large indoor spaces.
Before we get into talking about some of the details of your work aimed at the visually impaired and mobility, I was thinking that probably most people think about Toyota as cars, trucks, and other kinds of vehicles.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could put their partner robot division into perspective, tell us where it lies within Toyota, what its mission is, et cetera.
Sure, absolutely. That's a great point, too. You know, even when I started, just as a side story, when I started within Toyota, specifically in the partner robot group, a lot of times, because Toyota is so big, I would meet other people in Toyota and be like, yeah, I work for the partner robot group. And they'd be like, oh, we have a robot group. We didn't even know about that. But I guess how it fits within Toyota and where it's at, if we go back to the beginning, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with how Toyota started as a company.
Not really.
Sakaichi Toyota, who was the founder in a lot of ways, his mother was actually a weaver. And he wanted to improve her quality of life. And so he patented the automated weaving loom that would actually automatically stop when one of the strings was broken. And that's originally where a lot of the sort of original funding and motivation for Toyota came from, was that. And he was considered the father of the industrial revolution in Japan, or one of the. And it was from that focus on quality of life, that the automotive company was born out of that eventually. But the idea was still carried from that original motivation to say, how do we as a company focus on improving quality of life for individuals? Currently, you know, really Toyota is focused on this idea of mobility for all. And so that mobility obviously includes cars and trucks and vans, but it also includes, how do we think about mobility as a solution for everybody? You know, it could be the blind community, or it could be other people that are in need of mobility solutions. So really, as a whole, when you introduce Toyota, you know, the heart of what we try to do is people in a lot of ways. Focus on people. How can we actually make a difference in their lives? And one of the ways we do that, obviously, in a large way is cars, but we want to do that in other places like the Partner Robot.
How long has the Partner Robot Group been active?
So the Toyota Partner Robot Group was actually started in some component development was originally started in 2000 in Japan. And in 2005 was when they had their first sort of public exhibition at the Aichi Expo in Japan. And that was where they had some robots that were playing trumpets and playing drums, et cetera. And it was more of a sort of a showcase in a lot of ways of the types of technologies that can be used for robots and where we can actually go beyond applying robots to something like the factory line. Then in around 2007, there was a global vision that was set for the Partner Robot Group. So that was when it expanded from something that was happening in Japan to more global. So there's our team here in North America, and there's also a team that exists in Europe as well, where they do some R&D, and our team is focusing on R&D and products as well.
And what's the mission of the Partner Robot Group?
The main idea is incorporating intelligence and gentleness into robotics platforms for that quality of life improvement. And there's a few main areas that they focus as far as where they can deploy this. So it's either home or work or medical spaces where you can actually take these robotic platforms and think about where are areas within these environments that we can actually improve quality of life for individuals.
So when I think of those robot projects in Japan, I think of the demographics in Japan as being an older population, and they're worried about having young people take care of the older people. Is that part of the thrust of what you're talking about here?
So you're absolutely correct that in Japan, there's definitely a focus on that because of the need. But in addition, I would say that applies in other areas and other demographics as well. So can we help an elderly individual live at home for a longer period of time without them having to go to assisted living facility or something like that?
And I guess there must be lots of offshoots to communities like the visually impaired, and that's how you got into doing some of your work in that arena.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would just augment what you were just saying, though. I don't know how you would define offshoot, but really, I view this project as not an offshoot. This is a focus of what we're trying to do. When we think of developing solutions for communities, you know, I would consider the blind and visually impaired just as important, just as prominent as the elderly community as well, because we're trying to focus on any place where we can actually think about contributing to quality of life. So within the blind community, this was not something where we were developing technology for a different group and we said, oh, we can apply it to the blind community. This was a let's focus on the blind community, think about them first and see what we can actually do. What sort of technologies can we use in that space to fill needs that they have?
That was a great segue. Can you give an overview of this project that's geared to the visually impaired and tell us what it's called?
Sure. Right now it's called Project Blade, which stands for Blind Aid. That's not the official name. We don't have an official name yet. So once we get there, I'm sure we'll let everybody know. We started with the idea that we wanted to develop a platform for the blind and visually impaired community, and we wanted to use our robotics knowledge and know-how to see what we can actually do for that community. So as I mentioned before, we initially got started thinking, and being roboticists, we come from a background, okay, we'll make a robot and we'll see what we can do for the blind community. But when we got integrated with the community from the get-go, we quickly realized that that was not the right solution for the community. First and foremost, robots are big and slow. So if we're trying to improve the mobility of individuals, the blind community is amazing. You know, when you look at them, how they traverse in space, they're fast. And we don't have robot platforms that are quite as fast as that can keep up with them. In addition, when the blind community is also using a lot of public transportation, such as a taxi or a bus or something like that, getting a large robotic platform in and out of that space or that vehicle or that method of transportation would be very difficult. So we had to transition really quickly at the beginning to understand, well, how can we use robotics technology to actually improve the quality of life for these individuals? So we did focus groups and we focused on what would be the right sort of physical device. And we kind of converged on something that would be wearable, that's sort of worn around the neck, like a neck pillow that one might wear in an airplane, but much more subtle, much more simple to be worn, that can provide information in between the gap of what's typically available through something like GPS and the cane or the guide dog. So from the get-go, we really said we don't want to replace any of the tools that exist that are very useful. So we don't want to replace the cane. We don't want to replace the guide dog because those are awesome, amazing tools that are available to the community. We also don't want to replace GPS because that's something that also works very well. What we wanted to do is identify, okay, what is it that's missing? What is that information that the cane or the guide dog can't give you? And how can we capture some of that information and provide it to the user?
So you want to supplement the capabilities, essentially.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like I said, we don't want to replace something that already exists. That's an amazing tool. What we want to do is supplement that with extra information that's not available, right? So if we can provide information in a large open indoor space as to where things are located and how we might be able to identify those things, that's something the cane or the guide dog is not going to give you. And it's also something that the GPS can't give you. So that's an area that we decided we wanted to focus on. This was in collaboration with the blind community all along the way. We tried to make sure we were listening to what were the challenges, where were the right challenges, what were the right things to be paying attention to, and then confirming that with user studies and surveys as well.
Can you describe how one of these systems might work if someone is wearing it navigating around?
The idea would be somebody would be wearing this device around their neck, and they'd be interested in knowing what's around them. So we're looking at the ability for the user to interact into what we would call sort of a scan, where you can press a button and the device would scan the environment and tell you what it's seeing, you know, whether it's an exit sign or a restroom sign or some store logos or something like that. And then also a find feature as well, where you can do the same, but maybe it's more focused. Instead of searching for everything, you're searching for one particular thing in the environment. And then once that item or items has been recognized, the feedback is provided to the user. So the feedback could either be through audio or haptic feedback.
So essentially you have a camera as input. Are you doing the processing remotely on the cloud, or is this all in the device itself?
This is all in the device. So one of the decisions that we made up front was we wanted this to be something that's functional across in many different locations. Certainly we've taken into consideration that we can accelerate things through being connected to the cloud. But what we wanted to do was make sure that something was available as a standalone platform for people to use. So if I'm in a rural place, if I don't have connection to the Wi-Fi, we wanted it to be something that was useful as a tool straight from the box and that wasn't too arduous to get connected. So we wanted it to be standalone. So it works as a standalone device. And over time, we hope to really sort of boost the performance as we get it more connected, but not requiring it to be connected.
So is this something that you're putting all of the intelligence and recognition databases into, or is there a learning facility that the user has to train this device in environments that they're likely to be in, or what?
Yeah, we don't want the user to have to do any sort of training. So this is something that, as it should be delivered to the user, it should be something that's usable straight from the go. You know, the environment, the real world is always much richer than any sort of simulated environment that we can create. So as we get to know and understand the real world and the full level of information that we need to process out there, we will improve over time. The target is to make sure that we function on certainly stuff like standardized signs and stuff from the beginning. And that should be something that's easily usable. Of course, as most people probably know, standardization of all the signs is not always universally applied. So we want to make sure that we use the best amount of training and information that we can up front to provide the best quality solution that's available to the users. So over time, again, this is still very much a project. So we don't have any sort of date on when we're doing any sort of beta release or when the product is coming out. But we want to make sure that what we have is definitely a useful tool for the user and definitely making a difference in their lives. And we want to provide that, make that available.
I believe I've read that Toyota has involved some of their employees in making videos of various signs and identifying marks that one would be likely to see in a large indoor space, and then annotating those so that you could expand your database. Is that true?
Yes, we are.
That is so cool.
There is an effort to get the internal Toyota community connected to this project. So there's a way to actually get more information and data from the world and the environment. And we want to engage the rest of the Toyota community to be as part of that process. There's two benefits to this. One is that we get a larger data set. Two is that we actually engage the whole community of Toyota to be conscious of the blind and visually impaired community and thinking from their lens, how do we actually, as a family of Toyota, make a difference and impact on people's lives.
You talked about having a camera on the device. Do you envision other sensors being used, such as sonar, et cetera?
Yes, there's the potential for other sensors, but what we're trying to do is not necessarily maximize the sensor suite on the product. What we're trying to do is maximize adoption. So what we're trying to do is make the device as cheap as possible so we can get it to as many people out there as possible. So by reducing the sensor suite to something like just a camera or something like that, we reduce the overall cost of the device and we still have the performance that we want to have the device achieve where it's actually doing something useful and valuable. Clearly, there's a lot of wonderful sensors that we could put on. You know, you could put an infrared sensor on there. You could do sonar. You can do laser sensing, et cetera. But the more sensors that you add to a device, not only does it become more expensive, but it also becomes more power hungry as well and heavier. So what we're trying to do is, from a very subtle, fashionable standpoint, can we just create a device that provides this information to the individuals and users that's accessible from the terms of affordability for the largest audience possible?
So you mentioned that the user would interact with the device via audio. Would that be using a bone conduction headset, or how are you doing that?
Yeah, so we want to have the user to be able to interact in multiple ways. So there's physical interaction, so there's some buttons on the device. There's audio interaction that we want to enable, so as far as people being able to command it through audio. And then there's the output. So there's speakers that it can actually feed back to. There's headphone jack. And also we want it to be able to connect Bluetooth to something if it was a bone conduction audio headset. Again, we don't want to replace a lot of the existing tools that the blind community uses out there. So it's very well known that the iPhone is a very useful tool for the whole community. And a lot of times they're either using the speaker or using the earbuds. So we want to make that as an option for our device to be able to use that as well. So we want to be more seamlessly integrated into the sort of existing ecosystem that a user is already interacting with their devices.
Well, that's a good idea, because a typical blind person will already have lots of equipment on them, whether it's a cane or a dog or an iPhone or some sort of earphone or whatever. So if you can do this without adding too many more things for the person to juggle, that's a good thing.
Yeah. The reason we came to that neck-worn device was specifically because we did not want to inhibit or impair, like you said, what's happening already. So a user might be holding their cane, they might be holding the guide dog. And at that point, you only have one free hand. And we did not want to put another device in the other hand to limit their mobility from that perspective as well. By having a device that's neck worn, it's still at a position where it can actually have a good perspective of the environment. It's not something that's worn on the head that's impairing either their hearing, or maybe some people don't want to mess up their hair. Maybe other people are wearing eyeglasses already. And having the amount of processing that we need in that space is not capable as well. So the neck-worn device really helps us find the best of all those worlds while still leaving the other hand free for holding that Starbucks coffee or something like that. So we wanted to make sure that that was part of what we're doing as far as what we're developing and focusing on that freedom for the individual.
I wonder, as a developer, what are some of the biggest challenges that you've had to deal with in either identifying customer requirements and/or the product itself?
I think for me, the biggest challenge that I've had is to continually remove the assumptions that I have about the community. So oftentimes, you know, one of the first things that I had was just viewing sort of the speed of mobility of blind individuals. You know, from my naive perspective, I always assumed they would traverse a little bit slower. But that's absolutely not the case. And I've had to remove my assumptions continuously. So for me, it's been great just getting to know people in that community and realizing that blind people are just people. They just happen to be blind. And, you know, from everything else, it's all the same. You know, so for me, just constantly reminding myself of that perspective has been great. And I think it's really been eye-opening for me. And I love the fact that I'm able to view it at least slightly from the perspective of the blind community. The challenge for what is the true needs, I think, has been easily understood by spending time with the community. You really see sort of the ability for them to engage in groups like mine, where we're actually trying to think of nice solutions and for them to want to have that right feedback. And we just have to be willing to accept sometimes critical feedback of directions that we're heading and making sure that we take those suggestions into account and apply it to what we're doing.
Are you at a stage yet where visually impaired people find this as a positive assistance that they think they might actually use in real life?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's really neat. That must make you feel very good working on a project like that then.
Yeah. You know what makes me feel good is, you know, having the opportunity to work on projects like this where, you know, I know a lot of other people are working on, you know, engineering or otherwise that may not be as fun and exciting what we're trying to do here, and having the backing of something like Toyota where we're focusing on this mobility for communities like this. And it's absolutely wonderful to see when people are able to use this and say, hey, yes, that would be a positive thing for me in my life and make a big difference.
So you envision this actually might become a product someday in some form at some unspecified date.
Yeah, correct. That's our goal, right? We're really trying to say, let's make a difference. Let's get something out there. Of course, there's a road to get there, but it's, you know, that time and that point is not really defined.
So be patient and keep your eyes and ears open, and maybe we'll get access to this device someday soon. Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about Project Blade from Toyota.
So if people do want to find out more about Project Blade, where would you send them?
I would send them to thetoyotaeffect.com, which is the, T-H-E, Toyota, T-O-Y-O-T-A, effect, E-F-F-E-C-T.com. And on that page, there is a link to the blind aid video. There's an audio described video as well for the blind community, which is linked from that page. And from there, you can actually find information.
If people have questions or comments, is there a way they can submit those?
Absolutely. People should reach out to Amy Gross at Finsbury, and her email is amy.gross, which is G-R-O-S-S, at Finsbury.com. And Finsbury is FINSBURY.com.
And do you have a social media presence?
We have shared the Blade, the Toyota Effect video on social media through Facebook and Twitter, but we do not have an official Blade Facebook page at the moment.
So I guess listeners can do a Google search for Blade Toyota and find lots of other information also.
Absolutely.
And if you want to do that search, you should know that Blade is B-L-A-I-D for blind aid.
Will you be looking for people to volunteer as beta testers, or do you already have access to a sufficiently large number of people?
When we get to the point where we're considering beta testing, you know, we want to make sure that we reach as wide of an audience as possible. So I believe the best way to keep informed on what we're looking for is just to maintain an eye on what's happening with Toyota and the general website and what's happening on the Toyota Effect, which is where we had this information on the blind aid project that we're working on. Obviously, we've had some public announcements related to this, and we've had a lot of really positive feedback. And we want to make sure, again, that when we get to a point where we're considering something like beta testing, we want to make sure that we have a diverse audience and making sure that we cover a broad spectrum of people.
So I guess I'd be a little bit remiss if, before letting you go, I didn't ask as a visually impaired person, when is my Toyota car going to be able to be drivable by me?
Yeah, great question. You're asking the wrong person.
Anyway, as usual, you can find all of the resources and links and contact information we talked about in the show by looking in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. In addition, if you're looking for shows about a particular topic, you can use the search feature on our website to search through our archive of nearly 300 shows by entering a topic, show number, or keyword, and you'll find a summary of each of the shows matching your criterion, along with links to the audio for that show and the show notes for that show.
That's it for show number 1631. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about employment considerations for the blind. Interested in getting a job? You should read Bonnie Mosen's new book, It's Off to Work We Go, Tools and Techniques for the Successful Job Hunt. This is a guidebook for blind and visually impaired job seekers as well as job holders. And we'll speak with Bonnie about many aspects of the employment process with a focus on what is special for blind and low vision individuals. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.